Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Andrew Shatkin Show on every Monday through Friday at 6:30 in the evening and 11 o'clock on Saturday and Sunday. And I very much welcome you to this show. And tonight I'm going to be talking about the topic of rejection and why people, in fact, reject Jesus as Lord and as God. And I'm going to consider a passage in Matthew 13, verses 53 to 58 on this issue, which I think will shed some light on why people may reject Jesus for reasons known to them. But I think I can offer some reasons. And I want to give you a little bit of background about myself, a little bit in 10 minutes to understand where I'm coming from on this show. And let me tell you that I welcome all comers and thinkers and readers and people of various stripes and thoughts. I welcome their thoughts and insights, and I don't exclude anyone, whether a proponent of Karl Marx or Lenin or a socialist, which had these people, by the way, the communists and socialists had a very widespread public until about 1940 or 45, from 1900 to 1945. So I would like to talk a little about my background. This is a politically incorrect show. We're interested in honest discernment, honest thought. We're not interested in media nonsense, political rhetoric, media lies or falsehoods or misleading thoughts. We're interested in honest discernment and honest thought and critical thinking based on the written word and not on some opinion you may have based on no facts. Not very helpful, in my opinion. And so, second thing is that I'm a Christian and I'm not about to change that religious conviction. I believe it's the true faith. I'm willing to listen to other paths of faith and with respect, but I believe mine is the true and valid religious system in the world, and it will prove to be, as you will see, as history unfolds. Christianity in 400 years took over the world, and it's continuing to do so, whether in China or in the Middle East or wherever it is. People risk their lives and die as martyrs to live this faith. It is a dynamic, living faith. It is not weak. It is strong, a strong system of thinking that many people constantly adhere to and adopt. It may have left the West for the moment, but that's because the West has embraced materialism as a goal, but that will prove to be inadequate system of thinking, or if it's thinking at all, based on your desire for sex, money, and entertainment, which are extremely superficial goals in the extreme. I believe in the full authority of Holy Scripture from Genesis to Revelation, and I adhere to the ancient creeds of the Church, the Apostles, Nicene and Athanasian Creed, and I am interested in reading the great books that I think will inform me, such as Augustine's Confessions, C.S. Lewis, Milton, Paradise Lost, or whatever the world in this respect offers me. I'm also, I run two radio shows, a podcast show, which over 4,300 people have visited from all countries in the world, including China and Arab countries, and of course, Saudi Arabia and Iraq. And over 4,300 people have visited this show, which has a Christian basis, from those countries, whether Muslim countries or China, atheist, agnostic China. I also have written over almost 600 blogs or essays, which are available for uploading, on my academia.edu. They're listed on my website. And they can be found on my social media, such as Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. My blogs, I think, have a Christian orientation, but they have many views expressed on them, political and social and current events, and many people read them constantly as I post them on academia.edu and my website and other venues. I also have written 10 books. Three of the books are Christian books, Essays in the Christian Worldview, which has had very wide national and international sales, has been bought by the entire University of California college system, as well as the college system in Louisiana, and has been bought by four Dutch universities and Marburg and the Zurich Public Library in Switzerland. I have also written a book, Essays in Faith, Culture, Politics, and Philosophy, which has been bought by, among others, by Harvard and the University of Pennsylvania. And finally, I've written a book on the parables, my interpretation of the 41 parables, and they are posted on my website and on social media, and also can be found on academia.edu. I'm also in the presence of posting my interpretations of the sayings of Christ, found in the four Gospels, and I look forward to presenting my interpretation of those sayings as I consistently post them and report on them and think about them. And I hope that these my interpretations of the parables of Christ and the sayings of Christ are these interpretations are helpful to the extent that I'm able to offer some thoughts on the matter. That's as much as I'm going to say tonight, as much as I have time for, because I want to go on the fact of, first of all, we have to understand the genesis of rejection. All of us in life experience rejection. It could be personal, from a person we liked that perhaps for some reason or other was not attracted to us, or it could be from a thought system that we find alien, whether communism or socialism, or it could be from things that disturb us, we're not happy with. We all experience rejection in life, rejection in jobs, rejections by people, for whatever reason. And the focus of these rejections and the reason for them, I have to say, based on some experience, is founded in that other person. And as to why people reject each other is unknown to the person who is doing the rejection, perhaps. It could be chemical. It could be something in their experience and background. But let me talk about Jesus, why people reject Jesus and find him, his message and his person troubling. First of all, many people don't really understand the claim of Jesus, and Jesus claims to be God. He said that he has the ability to forgive sins, which only God can do. I can't forgive anybody's sins, neither can you, neither can anybody listening to this show. But he made this claim to be God, and he made a very exclusive claim. And in fact, in Exodus, God tells us in his handing down the Ten Commandments from Mount Sinai, "And you shall have no other gods before me." And Jesus says that he is the only way to know God. He is the way, the truth, and the life in John 3:16. Among others, he makes many statements in John about his exclusivity of his claim. And I have to say, ladies and gentlemen, that the reason why the world rejects Jesus, or some people reject Jesus, is the exclusivity of his claim. The modern world wants to say all religions are the same, all people are good, you can believe anything you want, you can have any opinion you want. As people will say, that's my opinion, that's your opinion. However, Jesus says different. He says objectively that he is God, and is the only way to be God, know God, and understand God through him. He makes a very exclusive claim, which in fact, in many instances, extremely annoys people. People in the modern world don't like to be told there's any exclusive truth. They don't want to be told that. They want to be told and believe that all forms of thought are valid, whatever you might want to think. And we sort of like make up our own truth subjectively. You might say that's our modern conception of truth. Jesus says different. And he makes a very extremely exclusive claim to be God and to be God alone, as he does many times in the Gospels. It's a claim we can't evade. We'd like to think of Jesus as a nice fellow, a good guy. Many people would like to see him as that. They object to seeing him as God, but that is his claim, and that claim irritates people and leads them to reject Christ. They're not happy with it. They don't like to be told that something is fully and absolutely true, and it irritates and annoys them. The second thing is, the second reason for Jesus and the world's annoyance at Christ is that in certain countries where there are vast numbers of poverty-stricken people, whether in the Middle East or in Africa or in China, these people are very anxious to hear the words of Christ. He tells them they have value despite their poverty and despite their underclass status. He raises them up in his thinking and word. And those societies which are run by an elite wealthy group at the top, whether in China, whether in Egypt, whether in Tunisia, whether in Algeria or Pakistan or whatever place you might imagine, those top people don't want people to hear this message. They are concerned. They are disturbed by the message. They don't want to have these underclass poor people told that they have value, equal value to anyone in the world and in society. That is Jesus, the heart of Jesus' ethical message. And these societies don't want their population to hear this, to be released from their underclass poverty-stricken status, and to be told they have great value, perhaps greater value than those of wealth. They don't want to hear that. They don't want to be told that. They don't want their societies to be in danger of collapse and change by this message. That's as much as I have to say why people reject other people and why Jesus is rejected. I gave two reasons: his exclusive claim and his concern for poverty and the underclass and evaluating them as opposed to these societies in the world, in Africa, in the Middle East, and in China, which do not want these people raised up or to think of themselves as having value. However, let's take a look at of a rejection of Jesus, which occurred in chapter 13, verses 53 to 58 of the Gospel of Matthew. It goes like this: "And when Jesus had finished these parables, he went away from there, and coming to his own country, he taught them in their synagogue. So they were astonished and said, 'Where did this man get this wisdom and these mighty works?'" They're annoyed by it. He goes away and goes to his own country and teaches them in the synagogue, and they're astonished. And they ask, "Where did this man get this wisdom and these mighty works?" And they say, "Is not this the carpenter's son? Is not his mother called Mary? Are not his brothers James and Joseph and Simon and Judas?" So they're saying, where is this man coming from that he got this knowledge and wisdom and these mighty works? He's just a carpenter. It's his mother is just called Mary, and his brothers James and Joseph and Simon and Judas. This is just a backward hick from the countryside. Where did he get all this wisdom and knowledge? They can't believe that this man, this carpenter's son, could get this mighty work, this wisdom and mighty works. And they say, "Isn't this the carpenter's son? Isn't his mother called Mary? And aren't his brothers James and Joseph and Simon and Judas?" And they say, "Where did he get all this? We can't believe it." And they took offense at him. They got angry. They got angry because Jesus exhibited his God-given intellect, which was so much greater than theirs or greater than anybody in the environment. And they can't believe, how could this man articulate this thinking when he's just a carpenter and his mother is Mary and his brother James, Joseph, and Simon and Judas? Where did he get all this? This guy who came from nowhere, came from Nazareth, a hick town. And they took offense at him. That's what the gospel says. And Jesus said to them, a prophet is not without honor except in his own country and his own house. And so he's saying that people in their immediate environment are often without, given no honor or respect in his own country, in his own house. And then Jesus ceases to do these miracles, these mighty works, because of their unbelief. So once again, Jesus here challenges us in our thinking and values. He returns to his own country. They're amazed that this carpenter's son can have this wisdom and do these works or miracles. They're astonished. They can't accept it, that a carpenter's son can have this wisdom and do these miracles. They say, this is the carpenter's son. This is the man whose mother we know and his brothers and sisters. So the issue in this passage is the wisdom of God found in Christ, and that he is a doer of miracles, and in fact is only the son of a carpenter, a humble tradesman, whose family, his mother, brothers are known to the community. So the issue in this passage is the wisdom of God in this carpenter's son, and he is a doer of miracles, and he is a humble tradesman whose family, his mother, brothers are known to the community. They're amazed and astonished that a man of such humble origin and exhibits such wisdom and power. So we have here an issue that these people raised, where he did these miracles and had this wisdom, and they say he's a carpenter's son, this Mary's son, his brother James, Joseph, Simon, and Judas, they're all with us. Where did he get this great, profound knowledge? And they take offense at him. And so he challenges us in our thinking and values. He returns to his own country. They're amazed that this carpenter's son can have this wisdom and do these mighty works or miracles. And they reference him by his trade. And they speak of his mothers and brothers and sisters. And they say, how can this doer of miracles and purveyor of wisdom, intellectual wisdom, be only the son of a carpenter, a humble tradesman, whose mother, brothers, and sisters are known to the community? They're amazed that a man of such humble origin can exhibit such knowledge and wisdom and power. So there is a class issue here for these people. They can't believe that a man of these working class origins can have this wisdom and do these miracles. And Jesus challenges us in every way. He challenges us because he comes from a small town in Palestine. His followers are simple fishermen. And he himself, his followers were sinners, who you might call people breakers of the ritual law and breakers of moral law. He himself came from working class origins. And how could this humble worker be found to be the true God? His followers are fishermen and a tax collector, the most looked down on group in the Palestinian society. And he himself suffers the death of an executed criminal beside two criminals. This is something that troubles the world, as I say. It will always trouble the world. And the troubles in this passage are his immediate neighbors in the community who found this person and what he proclaimed, his wisdom and miracles, to be too much in their jealousy to accept. They're jealous. They're annoyed that this carpenter's son, this person who's a nothing, can have this wisdom and have these miracles. They're too jealous to accept it. Familiarity breeds contempt. Jesus' countrymen fail here. They fail because they're too jealous to perceive God's presence in him, because they know his humble origins, which they share, and despise his background as they despise themselves. So they're too jealous to accept his wisdom and his miracles, and they fail to perceive and accept God's presence in him, because they read his humble origins as viewed with contempt, which they share, and despise his background. The issue here is the mistaken and erroneous thinking of the world, which judges on wealth and power and position and class background. No matter how great that person is, he is a person of humble origin who lacks power in the world system. And this led Jesus to cease his miracles, and because of their unbelief and jealous resentment. See, the issue here, and the issue that will always be, this man, this humble tradesman, this man whose family lived in the area, this man, how could he be proclaiming this wisdom and doing these miracles when he, his disciples are fishermen, he is a tradesman, he suffers the death of an executed criminal, his followers are sinners, and he's executed with two criminals by his side. This is a message that troubles the world and will always trouble the world. And in this passage, his immediate neighbors and his community find that what he, his wisdom and his miracles too much in their jealousy to accept. Familiarity breeds contempt. Jesus' countrymen not only fail to perceive God's presence in him, but they won't perceive it because they know his humble origins, which they share and despise his background completely. The issue here in this passage is the mistaken and erroneous thinking of the world, which judges on wealth and power and position and class background, no matter how great that person is. His humble origins come to despise, to cause him to be despised, because he lacks power in the world. This thinking prompted Jesus to take his way from these people, to cease his mighty works, because of their unbelief caused by this jealous resentment. I hope you've enjoyed this, little excursus on this passage in Matthew, which is Matthew 13, 53 to 58. I've done it quickly, and I may, in fact, go over it again tomorrow to shed more light on it. And I do hope you've enjoyed it and gained some knowledge and information for what I've offered here. So please be free to read this gospel passage in Matthew 13, 53 to 58, and to read my blog, my essay, entitled The Rejection of Jesus in His Own Country. I not only in this talk tonight handled this particular gospel passage and sought an interpretation of it, but gave you reasons for personal rejection in life, which has nothing to do with you or me, and also the fact that why the world rejects the message of Jesus. I gave you the reasons, and I hope you grasp them and understand them, because it's very essential that we understand why people reject Jesus, why they do so, and the causes of them to do so. And the reasons are his exclusive claim, as I said, which irritates people in our modern world no end, and because they want to be told everything's good, everything's diverse, everything's inclusive, we can't have there are no differences, everybody's the same, all opinions are good, which is a ridiculous statement. They're not, but mostly they're wrong and are to be measured as such, without factual or truth foundation. And the second reason is that Jesus claimed to be God. That was one reason. The claim to be God was a fantastic irritant and still is to many people. His exclusive claim is extremely annoying. And in addition, his message of the essential value and equality of all men and women, despite their wealth and position, is something the societies where the poor are predominant and the richer are in control, those people at the top don't want these people to hear this message, which will free them from their economic slavery they've been cast into. I hope you've enjoyed this talk, and I'm talking again tomorrow night on Jesus and his love for children. I hope you've enjoyed tonight's talk. Bye.